of the Merciful. Another condition for supplication that Lady Fatime has taught us is to pay for others before ourselves. It is narrated that one night, Hazrat Fatime, peace upon her, was praying till dawn. Her elder son, Imam Hassan, peace upon him, noticed that she prayed for everyone but not for herself. When he asked the reason, she answered, "Neighbor first, house next." Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, has taught us to recite this supplication after daily obligatory prayers in Ramadan. O God, send joy to the inhabitants of graves. O God, make rich every poor. O God, satisfy every hungry. O God, cover every naked. O God, pay the debt of every debtor. O God, remove the grief of every sad. O God, return every stranger back home. O God, free every captive. O God, reform every corruption in Muslims' affairs. O God, cure every sick. O God, prevent our poverty by your richness. O God, change our bad state to your good state. O God, pay our debts and enrich us against poverty. Indeed, you are powerful over all things.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program.
Ramadan is here. Allah's mercy is near. Time to give, time to share, time to show we care. Cause Ramadan is here. Whoa, Ramadan is here.
Today's lesson: merits of eating less. Well, we have discussed and we have been discussing some of the merits. Some of them are physical and some of them are spiritual and some are both, of eating less. In the holy month of Ramadan, this is an opportunity for all of us to eat less and take full benefit of these merits. Let's talk about another benefit of eating less. Another effect of less eating is less sleeping. We know that oversleeping is one of the most important factors of wasting our age, which is in the precious sum at our disposal for our hereafter's affairs. But hunger reduces sleep, thus providing opportunities for night vigil, the source of all blessings and bounties, and helps a human being in worshiping and supplications, which is the ladder for his attaining the most desirable spiritual station, which is also known as Maqam al-Mahmud. Another one of the merits of eating less is the ease of worshipping rather than servitude, because the one who is used to less eating will save a lot of time which otherwise must have been spent for making arrangements, purchasing, cooking, consuming, and relieving, as well as time spent for medical treatment, since in many cases the sickness is the cause of overeating. Therefore, he will utilize all this available time in worship and servitude. In addition to that, he will free himself from the hardships of arranging good foods and, you know, medical treatments, which means that he will be having more time, more free time, as well as more ease and comfort.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين مرحبا بالتائبين مرحبا بالعابدين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the merits of eating less. Holy month of Ramadan gives us that opportunity where we can not only improve our physical condition, but also, more importantly, our spiritual condition. Well, one of the effects of eating less is the financial ability of a person to spend for charity, benevolence, pilgrimage, and other acts of worship, which require expenses. Because a lot of expenses spent only for providing unnecessary food items or for medical treatment as a result of overeating could be utilized for the above-mentioned worships. The advantages described are so vast in scope that the faculty of reason is helpless to describe their profundities. Especially the prime advantages are purity of heart, sharpness of mind and thinking, because thinking is tantamount to ultimate result, while our other actions and deeds are tantamount to preliminaries. Even thinking or meditating in itself is spiritual journey, while the other actions and deeds constitute the preliminaries and background of the spiritual journey. In the holy month of Ramadan, we have all experienced here and there that we do get an opportunity to contemplate more, to think more, to focus more, to think about things that are pertaining and related to our hereafter. Think about the affairs of our soul and spirit. This is another merit of and the benefit of the holy month of Ramadan, in which we eat less. But remember, if we eat more than usual, then most probably we will be deprived of these merits and benefits.
Forgive me for everything I've done in the past, when everything was going so fast, and now I just can't go on.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Stronger if you are by my side, Allah.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Aperture.
Depleted uranium made a spectacular entrance on the battlefront in 1991. During the first Persian Gulf War, bombs and shells made with this high-density metal annihilated Saddam Hussein's tanks. And since then, the U.S. military have regarded depleted uranium munitions as the magic weapon. For those who use it, depleted uranium is beyond reproach. But others say it is a deadly poison. So who's right and who's wrong? Many countries possess weapons based on depleted uranium, and experimentation has been rife. But the consequences for civilians and the military alike have been dramatic. Today's documentary, Depleted Uranium, a Very Presentable Killer, compares and contrasts the arguments of those who defend and attack a technology that is highly toxic. Stay with us for the first part.
It's a wonderful weapon. Depleted uranium is a very dense, hard metal. And you put it on the end of a bullet, or you put it on the end of a shell, and it'll go through a tank and go through the second tank. I mean, it's wonderful from a military standpoint.
Based on the fact that certain armies around the world are developing new armor plating capabilities, which can't be pierced other than by depleted uranium munitions, it's quite normal to conserve a high-level operational capability that the French army envisages equipping its Leclerc tanks with this type of munitions.
I was trying to say, hey guys, you may be creating a problem. I have been very careful not to accuse because, you know, j'accuse is a pretty strong thing to say to somebody.
My name is Jacques Charmelot. I've been a journalist for 30 years. I've covered conflicts in Africa, Iran, Lebanon, Iraq, and in the Balkans. And I've worked in Washington, a secret and powerful city. On July the 4th, 2012, I'm in America's federal capital. I'm in the crowd attending the Independence Day parade. But my thoughts are elsewhere. I'm back from a battleground that the American soldiers have just left, Iraq. Barack Obama has put an end to more than 20 years of war-torn confrontation between the US and this distant country. But what I saw there is indelibly etched on my memory. Depleted uranium begins in Iraq. Iraq has been subjected to more than 50 years of revolutions, dictatorships, and wars. And it's trying with all its might to be reborn. but its poison past weighs heavy on the fate of 30 million Iraqi citizens. My investigation begins in Basra, a huge port caught between Iran, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia. In February 1991, it is at the heart of the international offensive to drive Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. The Iraqi tanks want to leave the small emirate, but American planes, masters of guise, are waiting for them. I head for the scene of the Iraqi rout.
I took part in the war in Kuwait against the American forces.
Could you tell us about leaving Kuwait? How it happened for you?
I fought in the war up to the very end until the Iraqi army retreated, but it wasn't so much a retreat as every man for himself. The road was exposed and the planes bombarded our military forces. That was the situation with our tanks. The road was open and straight, and it was very easy for the Americans to bomb our tanks. It was this the road of death.
The final battle in the war lasted just 10 hours. Hundreds of tanks and vehicles were blown into shreds and abandoned in the desert. Much later, an official American document explains why the success was so devastating. On the road of death, American pilots used a newcomer to their weaponry arsenal. They fired thousands of rounds containing at least 320 tons of depleted uranium. The rounds are equipped with a depleted uranium arrowhead penetrator, which can pierce any armor plating. They catch fire on impact, reaching over 1,000 degrees, igniting the target and emitting a cloud of fine dust. They are real tank killers. Four countries are the main producers: the United States, Russia, China, and France. Natural uranium is used in numerous countries. Once enriched, it becomes highly radioactive and is used in atomic weapons and nuclear power stations. The residue of the enrichment process is called depleted uranium. It is weakly radioactive, but is not degradable. It has to be securely stored or recycled. 50,000 tons are produced around the world every year. In Basra, depleted uranium is accused of leaving a terrible legacy. I head for the city's central hospital.
Are you being treated?
Yes, I'm still being treated. Until God takes my soul. They diagnosed cancer in my pancreas and then my liver. You know, the countries that started the wars don't come to help us. They poured their poison on us and then they went away.
In 1991, the first Gulf War started, and at that time I was here on a duty at night duty, when the airplanes, fighters and bombs. After that, by many years, 3 or 4 years, we start to see many cases of cancer. If we compare it to the 80s or 90s, we found there is an increase of, say, fourfold. 1996, somebody came here with a delegation, escorting a delegation. He's from the security, and he knows about the problem, and he told me, "Doctor, you know that we are under the effects of depleted uranium, which is used by the American." Yeah, he just whispered into my ear that we got this problem. And so we start to have a link between the use of depleted uranium and the increased cancer rates. You know, now we have what we call a cancer phobia here among people. Everybody who got a mass, they think that he got a cancer.
Even before Dr. Jawad Al-Ali learnt about the dangers of depleted uranium, in 1995, the Americans produced a film alerting its own soldiers to the risks involved with the heavy metal.
Battlefields and fighting are by nature hazardous to your health. Some hazards are easy to identify and well understood. Soldiers recognize the serious hazards presented by incoming artillery shells and bullets and take appropriate actions. However, some lesser hazards from new technological applications are not so well known and recognized. One of these newer applications is the use of depleted uranium in munitions and equipment armor.
The film fixes three safety rules for dealing with potential depleted uranium contamination. Get away as far as possible, as quickly as possible, and avoid any exposure to the skin. Three rules that were impossible to respect in Basra. I discover one of the tank cemeteries that abound throughout the city. There are thousands of tons of debris, some of which contaminated by depleted uranium dust, have been accessible to the population here for 20 years. I'll ask the head of the Environment Ministry why such dangerous metal wasn't removed to safety.
After 1991, we had a full report on the sites and their effects. There was no department to deal with it. Every time we found a piece of contaminated metal, we identified it with a red or yellow tag. Before 2003, we put a notice, danger, contaminated fragment, do not approach. Shortly after, we'd return to the same place and the notices would have disappeared and we'd find them somewhere else. Even if we deemed it important at the time, it was only relatively important, as the situation was very complex and local authorities had other concerns. Why did the Americans from 2003 and even since 1991 not remove or displace the metal waste? They did nothing at the time. The likely reason, in my view, is that they hadn't yet measured the effects of using this weaponry. They wanted to see the results and the effects after 5, 10, and 15 years, etc. God will decide. But the munitions they used against us will have effects on our children, our grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren for generations to come, probably until the end of time.
During the invasion of Kuwait, Paris was a faithful ally of the USA, and French troops played a crucial role. I contact journalist Marie-Claude Dubin, who was at the front line.
There was a tank which looked all burnt up. And I said, can I go inside? It's not mine. No, it's not mine. You can go in. I raised up clouds of dust, and I never imagined that the ashes were mixed with depleted uranium dust.
What illness are you suffering from?
An autoimmune disease. I've been told it attacks the nerves, muscles, the thyroid, plus certain neurocognitive problems, neuromuscular lesions.
To get a clearer picture of what happened to Marie-Claude Dubin and to patients in the Basra hospital, I go to Valence to see a scientist. For years, Roland Desbordes has been speaking out against the risks of depleted uranium. He's the president of CRIRAD.
We know that depleted uranium is pyrophoric, which means that it ignites spontaneously in the air, with the oxygen in the air. A flameless combustion, but with oxidization, producing uranium oxide, which is an extremely fine dust that's released into the air. You can then be contaminated internally, either through inhalation, if you're not wearing a mask, or by ingestion, because it'll be on your fingers. The uranium combines many risks, but why? Because it's an alpha emitter, and alpha radiation is what causes the most internal damage. Secondly, because it's a heavy metal, and we retain it. It metabolizes within the organism for many long years. For it to lose half its radioactivity, it takes 4.5 billion years.
4.5 billion years is the same age as planet Earth. These concerns over the harmful effects of depleted uranium dust are shared by official scientific bodies.
The problem is, in the case of internal contamination, either you ingest it because you're in a contaminated environment and it can be found in the water and in food, or you inhale, and the particles of depleted uranium reach your lungs. There are two phases to this. Firstly, the uranium particles have to be dissolved to get into the blood, and once they're in the bloodstream, they'll be distributed among the various organs. Once in the organs, either it builds up or it doesn't.
We often refer to the case of the Iraqi children who play in the tanks that were destroyed and who collect the scrap metal and cut it up, or housewives who sometimes recycle the metal to make pots that they'll subsequently cook in. Do you think there's a risk?
There are potential effects, especially if there's repeated exposure, even if it's not chronic. And this will be the case. Children come to play, water is cooked in the pots. With ingestion, with repeated administration within the body, even if you only have weak doses, the fact of accumulating the various doses can ultimately have an effect on health.
Clearly, the depleted uranium dust falls down. And it settles.
Yes. Once it falls, obviously the ground will be contaminated. Afterwards, it depends on how this contamination comes about, if it's very localized or not, and whether it's in towns or in fields which will be cultivated. So there will definitely be a contamination of the environment.
Things are becoming clearer to me, and more worrying. The depleted uranium particles are dangerous for health and for nature. The career of depleted uranium munitions began in Iraq, but it continued in the heart of Europe, just a few hours by air from capital cities like Paris, Rome, and Berlin. I walk among the graves in the Jewish cemetery in Sarajevo. It was from here that Serbian snipers kept the besieged city locked down. The journalists, who like myself, came to cover the conflict, often found themselves behind the yellow walls of the Holiday Inn. In 1992, divisions in Yugoslavia forced Bosnia into a war. In April, the inhabitants of Sarajevo were trapped. The UN launched an impossible mission to reconcile Muslims, Serbs, and Croats. But the war dragged on, and in 1995, NATO intervened. NATO planes, mostly American, bombed the Serbs, who were forced to make peace. The Sniper Alley tramway takes me to Hadići, a suburb on the outskirts of Sarajevo. I enter a ruined factory, a key element in the Serbs' military industry. Tanks and cannons were repaired here. NATO planes attacked the Hadići factory 7 times in September 1995. And fired more than 4,000 depleted uranium shells. When peace was reinstated, many Serbs from Hadići moved to Bretunac, a Serbian republic town in eastern Bosnia. They went there to live and also to die. Nedeljko Zelenović is a journalist and a witness. He has investigated the NATO bombings. His father, uncle, cousins, and dozens of friends worked in the Hadići factory.
All the workers who worked on the assembly lines at the time, who were caught in the fighting, and later at the time I was following events, they all died from various forms of cancer. In 1996, the population of Bretunac was between 20 and 22,000 people. And less than 5% of them came from Hadići. That year, in 1996, 154 people were buried in the Bretunac Municipal Cemetery. 3% of them came from Hadići. But in 2000, 105 people were buried in Bretunac, and 50% of them came from Hadići. I have a few names if you're interested.
Jerić Budimir, Andriy Drago, Mastro Dusha, Banduka Milinko, Banduka Danilo, Aleksić Nenad, Makaj Simo, Stanojević Velja, Puša Ramon, Rukaš Ljubica, Lavušić Gospod.
What did your son die of?
He was diagnosed with leukemia. I asked what it was caused by, and they told me it was due to depleted uranium.
Mehmed Telalevich is a Muslim. During the war, he fled Hadice, driven out by the Serbs. In 1996, he returned home, close to the ruins of the arms factory. He found his house blown apart by bombs. Mehmed rebuilt it, not suspecting that the land around it had been contaminated by poisonous dust.
We were never told. Nobody ever said anything. The public at large can't even be aware of it, as this disease is really a lottery. You put up with it, you fight it, and you might live or die. I know at least 10 people here, all young, aged between 35 and 40. They all have a cancer.
Mehmet tells me that he discovered he had colon cancer in 2004. He's taken chemotherapy and is now in remission. But the news is not good. The latest tests revealed that his prostate is 4 times bigger than normal. He has blood in his urine.
I've become fragile. Before I could take normal showers, but now I have to have very, very hot showers. I have to wear leggings. I'm cold all the time. I'm delicate. My blood is anemic. I've no immunity.
Are you sure all this is because of the factory?
Oh yes, I'm 100% certain. There are no other diseases here apart from cancer.
I pursue the depleted uranium trail in Italy. A great ally of the USA within NATO, the country organized humanitarian missions in Bosnia. It later sent a strong contingent to separate Serbs and Albanians in Kosovo. And it was in Italy that the dangers of depleted uranium weapons were widely exposed in late 1999. In Rome, I meet another Italian soldier who'd been sent to the Balkans, Colonel Americo Lacetti.
So it began in 1999. I came back in 1999, and on December 24th, I had an X-ray. I remember I was alone with the technician. There was nobody at the hospital. When I asked him what I had, he said, "What have you got?" And then he said, "Enjoy Christmas, because you won't be here next year." I had this lump 24 centimeters long, 14 centimeters wide, and 12 centimeters thick. A tumor in my lungs. After that, I had other tests, and they took a piece of the tumor and examined it. Inside were numerous ceramic particles, perfectly round. And they contained a load of substances that don't exist naturally. But they do exist when a depleted uranium projectile strikes a hard surface. This produces a cloud of dust, which when you inhale it, creates this type of pathology. I'm now living in a body that's mined.
As the death toll builds in Italy, the public is outraged, and the government has to act. On January the 3rd, 2001, the Prime Minister, Giuliano Amato, breaks the official silence and announces that he is going to demand a full account from NATO. But this demand will have little effect.
Allahu, 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 Allahu.
IRIB English Radio presents The Month of Allah. Let's be with Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Abbas Razavian.
As I look to nature's beauty, dazzled am I, knowing everything comes on you, the Lord Most High.
Allah, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, Wassalatu Wassalam ala Ashrafil Anbiya'i wal Mursaleen, Sayyidina Abul Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad. Welcome to the program Month of Allah. It is the holy month of Ramadan. There are golden opportunities for us. One of those things that the month of Ramadan causes for the believers that fast is that it gives us a strong sense of willpower. It strengthens our willpower. Many people in their lives, they face challenges and they don't know how to overcome those challenges. A lot of those problems are removed, the solution comes by having a strong sense of willpower. For example, a person smokes. They ask him, you know, smoking is endangering your health, is endangering the health of your friends. He says, you know, it's too difficult for me. Why? Because they don't have a strong willpower. Someone eats unhealthy food all the time. A doctor tells them, you should not eat this type of food. He says, you know, it's too difficult for me to overcome not eating. But what we understand and what we gain from the holy month of Ramadan is that we become very strong. Why? Because we are separating ourselves from food, we are separating ourselves from drink and other invalidators of fast. These are very necessary things of human life that we have to drink water, we have to eat, or else we'll die. But a fasting person takes away these primary necessities of human life, and instead, when the month of Ramadan ends, and they have taken away halal food from themselves, when haram food comes in front of them, it's very easy for them to say, no, I don't want it anymore. For example, when they want to, there's haram drink in front of them, and they want to say no, it's very easy because they strengthen their willpower. And this is the key to many of our solutions of our problems. Because if we don't have a strong enough willpower, we will never be able to study well as students. We'll never be able to work hard as people that are trying to progress their career. We'll never be good fathers or mothers because we don't have that willpower. So Islam in actuality is giving us a very strong sense of willpower. And inshallah, with this willpower that's gained in the month of Ramadan, and after the month of Ramadan, we can increase and become better human beings. The second thing that I'd like to mention is that the month of Ramadan is about organization. If you look at the time period of the month of Ramadan between iftar, and that is when we break our fast, it is very exact and very precise. If you ask somebody, you know, outside the month of Ramadan, you know, when is sunset and when is Maghrib, they'll tell you, I don't know. But when a person is in the month of Ramadan, you ask them, when is sunset? They'll tell you it's going to be 6 hours, 45 minutes, for example, in 23 seconds. They'll be very precise. This is something good. This is bringing us organization. That when we organize ourselves, we are learning, eat at a certain time, break fast at a certain time, pray at a certain time. This is giving us nadhm. Imam Ali alayhi salam, in one of his last wills that he had for the people, we read in Nahjul Balagha, he says to his children, and he says to those people that this letter reaches, that is us, بِتَقْوَى اللَّهِ وَنَذْمِ أَمْرِكُمْ, that you should be careful of guarding yourself. It also aligned with guarding yourself and your spirituality against sin. It is نَذْم أُمُورَكُمْ, that is being careful to organize your affair, to have a spiritual schedule for yourself. Sometimes we have a program for ourselves in terms of exercise. We have a program for ourselves in terms of education. But how come we don't have a program for ourselves in terms of spirituality? If we're going to progress, we need to have a continuous and well-balanced spiritual program for ourselves, And that is something that the month of Ramadan brings us. It brings us organization. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala bayti at-tayyibin at-tahirin.
قال الإمام الباقر عليه السلام بني الإسلام على خمس: على الصلاة والزكاة والصوم والحج والولاية، ولم ينادى بشيء كما نودي بالولاية.
Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam said, Islam is based on five: prayer, alms, fasting, the obligatory pilgrimage, Hajj, and the divine guardianship, and no other issue has been called for as much as divine guardianship.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, ma lana rabbun siwa.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, ma lana rabbun siwa.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The light.
Hello and welcome back to The Light. Malaysian farmers tap classical music and massages to grow one of the world's most expensive fruits, Japanese muskmelons. The farmers believe the method is the best way to grow Japanese muskmelons in Malaysia's hot tropical weather. They regularly rub the melons with a soft cloth or glove. That's a practice, the farmers say, enhance the melon's flavor. To stimulate their growth, classical music is played in greenhouses, and now all these efforts have paid off following constant trials. The farmers are finally selling their prized luxury fruits of labor on the market. A dozen lucky penguins have been returned to the wild after rehabilitating from malnutrition and anemia. The Magellanic penguins waddled back happily into the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Argentina. They were distressed, malnourished, and dehydrated when they were found by conservationists. Some of them had lost their plumage due to malnutrition, but they recovered their feathers after receiving special nutrients. There are an estimated 2 to 3 million Magellanic penguins in the world. The cute birds are named after a Portuguese explorer, Ferdinand Magellan. They are mostly found around Argentina and Chile. People in Britain are marking the easing of lockdowns implemented to curb the coronavirus pandemic. Words like freedom, hope, family, reunion, and relief have been projected on the walls of the UK's most iconic landmarks, as well as shops and department stores, to show people's feelings. A British company commissioned a survey to find the words that best summed up people's feeling after months of lockdown began to be lifted on Monday. Those celebrating the event say reunion is the word that can best express their feelings.
The most powerful word in there for me is reunion. We've all been apart from each other, friends, loved ones, colleagues, who are also loved ones, I suppose, in some cases, and really looking forward to getting back to my friends and family that I haven't seen for a long time, and imagine a lot of the British public are too.
The event comes as the UK has been the worst hit nation with a pandemic across Europe. The country saw a staggering number of infections and deaths for months. This prompted authorities to impose restrictions in an effort to bring the pandemic under control. Japanese Olympics organizers have unveiled the Games' iconic rings on top of Mount Pokhara, a popular tourist spot in the west of the Japanese capital, Tokyo. The unveiling of the rings comes as athletes around the world are ramping up training some 100 days ahead of the international event. The sad side of the story, however, is that spectators are barred this time to accompany the organizers to mark and celebrate it. This is because uncertainty still exists over how and even whether or not the Games will take place. A surge of the coronavirus infections, including in Japan, is playing havoc with preparations ahead of the Olympics. Many hope mass vaccinations would help hold the event. Suppose you have run out of milk and you're not in the mood to shop for shopping. This is for you. Robots are lending a hand with grocery shopping in Singapore. A technology company has deployed two robots to a neighborhood for a trial period. Both named Camilo, the machines deliver items from nearby supermarkets and online shops to around 700 households. Designers say people tend to use robots in the pandemic era.
Especially during this pandemic period, everybody is looking at, you know, contactless, humanless, because in the robot itself, it has its own disinfection UVC light that we could do disinfection after every trip is being made by itself.
The robots are equipped with sensors and cameras, and they can carry up to 20 kilograms in their compartment. Users can track the robot on its way using a mobile application. The smart machines make 4 or 5 deliveries per day.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trendy news, and more from every corner of the world.
Section of highway winding through mountains and over the waters in central China provides people with picturesque views as it connects multiple tourist attractions in the region. Guzhuao Highway is located in Yichuan City in Hubei Province. The highway has a total length of more than 10 kilometers. Almost 4.5 kilometers of the highway stretches over valleys and streams. The highway also offers convenience for self-driving tourists. In order to avoid deforestation and protect the ecological environment, building bridges was adopted to replace a traditional approach of digging tunnels and constructing roads in mountains.
Now, a group of researchers have discovered a new mammal from the dinosaur era during their excavations in Chile. The creature, called the Oretherium zen, meaning beast of five teeth, inhabited southern Chile's Miocenes region during the Mesozoic era of the dinosaurs. This is a very important discovery as it fills a gap in information on the evolution of a mysterious group of mammals that became extinct and have no descendants today.
The interesting thing with this finding, and this is based on a fairly well-preserved portion of the jaw with five teeth, is that this animal probably was an omnivore. So it fed on plants, probably insects and other types of food, a varied diet. It coexisted in the same place with other forms of life, including mainly dinosaurs. On rocks with a data that indicates that it was between 72 million and 74 million years old. And this is located in the far south of Chile, in the Magallanes region, in the town of Valle del Rio de las Chinas.
The find may help scientists answer many questions they had for a long time about dinosaurs, mammals, and other groups. This discovery is more significant than other findings because a well-preserved jaw belonging to the dinosaur was found during the excavations.
To Egypt, where archaeologists have discovered an ancient city dating back to more than 3,400 years ago. The city, which is the largest ever found in Egypt, dates back to the Golden Age of the Pharaohs. It's located in the city of Luxor, some 500 kilometers south of the capital, Cairo. The city had almost complete walls, as well as rooms filled with tools of daily life, along with rings, scarabs, colored pottery vessels, and mud bricks. Archaeologists say this is just the beginning of a discovery.
We believe that this golden lost city is the most important discovery after the discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun. I call it golden because it was found in the golden age of Egypt, 1391 BC. I call it lost city because it was lost. No one really believed that the city could exist here. The dazzling Aton, three main districts, one area for storage. We found a big area for the storage of meat, making sandals, also sewing clothing, precious stones for making necklaces and bracelets, pottery. Tell us about the relation of Egypt with the New Kingdom. We think that this is the beginning of the discovery.
Hawass says only one portion of the city has been discovered. The team will excavate the area of the temples in September. One other amazing thing about the discovery is that archaeologists found a large fish covered in gold that may have been venerated by the people living in the city. Archaeologists claim this is the second most important discovery since the tomb of Pharaoh Tutankhamun nearly a century ago. As a famous saying goes, everyone deserves a second chance. That's true about humans and animals. Mary is a baby alpaca from Germany. Her hind limbs were severely damaged in a traumatic birth, forcing vets to amputate one back leg. However, that was not the end of the way for this cute woolly mammal. A charitable farmer found Mary and adopted her. Now she has her own special wheeled harness that she works with. Mary's owner hopes to give her an artificial limb once she regains enough strength to carry weight on her remaining hind leg. That way, she can live as a regular happy alpaca.
Allah, Allah.
چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خداست، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allah ya Allah subhanallah. Allah ya Allah walhamdulillah.
I invite you to listen to a short part of chapter 9 of the book Sirr al-Salat, The Secret of Prayer by Imam Khomeini. Chapter 9 entitled On the Secrets of the Time. And in the traditions, both have been called prayers, and the time for the afternoon prayer is the time of Adam's sin entering into the veil of tendency toward the nature tree. But the time for the evening prayer is in the time of the darkening world and entire vanishing of the real sun. There is a tradition has been quoted of the infallible, the evening is when that Adam repented, then he observed prayer, three parts, one for himself, second one for the Eve sin, and the third one for his own repentance.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio and I'm your host Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. We are glad to give our congratulations on the appearance of the month of Ramadan. The month of Ramadan is a month about which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says شهر رمضان الذي أنزل فيه القرآن The month of Ramadan is the month in which Allah has revealed the Quran. And this revelation of Quran is for the guidance of the mankind. And it has clear evidences. And it is the differential between the right and wrong. Because this program is about the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini, the part of the speech that I have today is in regards to the actions of humans and it is in regards to the self-building because the month of Ramadan is a month in which we build ourselves, we combat with ourselves. Therefore, in this part of speech, Imam Khomeini says that we cannot reform our country unless we first reform ourselves.
كم أهواك يا شهر الصيام أنا لن أنساك فأنت في قلبي دائما تمضي الأيام ودعائي كل عام ربي تقبلنا يا ربي بلغنا بلغنا رمضان
He also mentions that each one must begin with himself and adapt his conduct, views, and deeds to Islamic decrees, and having thus corrected himself, then proceed to reform others. Unfortunately, we think that we can reform others, we can bring change in the society while we are neglecting ourselves. But Imam Khomeini is referring to the very basic rule that has been mentioned in the Quran. And he says that unless you change yourself, you cannot change anyone else. If you do not change yourself, you cannot even change your family members or the people who are close to you. Therefore, we need to change ourselves in this month. We need to make a change and we need to adapt the Islamic decrees in our life so that we can change ourselves first and then the society so that we can reach to a level where we will have the society which was promised by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. May Allah give us all tawfiq to learn the teachings of Quran and Ahlul Bayt and live according to those teachings, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day.
Every night and every day.
www.parstoday.com/en